know, your ass better call somebody.
Brought to you by WorldWrestlingInsanity.com.
Hey, what's up, guys? That's right, you found your way to part two of JG's Radio Free Insanity for Friday, April the 14th, 2006. We are about to be joined on the phone line by the one and only BG James, formerly Road Dogg in WWF. It was still F back then. We hadn't gotten the F out yet. But eventually he got the F out, went to TNA. He's now BG James, member of the James Gang with Billy Gunn, formerly the New Age Outlaws. Wanted to have BG on for a while, so instead of yapping about it, let's just cut the BS, bring him on the phone, and hook it up. All right, folks, so join me in welcoming to the show BG James. What's going on, BG?
Oh, you didn't know? As if you didn't, I'm down here in Pensacola, Florida. It's about 85 degrees. I just been out. We went to an Easter party at my daughter's school, and they came home from school. We've been out by the swimming pool. So everything's going good this Easter weekend for BG James. What's going on with you?
Not much, man. It sounds like you got better weather down there than we get up here. I'm up in New York, so. But depending on
No, it's beautiful. About 85 degrees, not a cloud in the sky. I was just chilling until I had to come in and talk to you for a little while.
Oh, sorry to bring you in from the
outside. No, that's quite all right. I'm sunburnt.
Well, let me ask you a few things right off the bat, man, because you're one of the guests that we've wanted to have on from the beginning. Just because I remember myself coming up in the late 90s, I watched a lot of the work that you did in WWE as a part of D-Generation X.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of what you did kind of brought WWE into that new attitude era a little bit, because you kind of broke the mold talking a little bit more about sparking one up and a lot of references, to pot and things like that they hadn't done before. How did that come about, and was it hard for you to get that gimmick going in WWE, considering they never really talked about it before?
No, it wasn't. To tell you the truth, the reason it was successful is because it wasn't a gimmick. At the time, I was just, I was living the gimmick. They say some of the boys in wrestling were sound living the gimmick. And so, that was pretty much just me. They handed off the ball, and I was dang sure willing to run with it. They were starting that attitude thing with Hunter and Sean and China a little bit, and then me and Billy hooked up, and then they said, asked if we'd like to be in DX, and I saw money signs, and apparently they did as well. So we were off to the races, and like I said, it was really fun, and I think it was so successful because it was so fun and it was so natural, because it wasn't me and X-Pac and Billy, it wasn't us acting or portraying some kind of gimmick that you're trying to work out. It was us, that was just us, and so it came off natural, and that appeals to the wrestling fan. They want to be involved in what you're doing, you know what I mean? And I think I represent every wrestling fan, because that's what I am. I'm just kind of white trash wrestling fan guy, and so I think maybe they relate to me.
Well, I mean, you and Billy, you guys actually, you're a perfect example of that, because immediately prior to you doing that, you were kind of almost over-scripted. You were doing the roadie gimmick and the real double J. What were your feelings on that gimmick and with My Baby Tonight?
To tell you the truth, that gimmick, actually, I know, look, in hindsight, you think, oh, Lord, what are they trying to do? But at the time, it was an awesome opportunity that they gave me. It was my first real spot, as I guess they would say, in professional wrestling. I'd done some jobs in WCW in 93, early 94, and then I got that gig as the roadie, and man, it was a great spot, to tell you the truth. Me and Jeff went right to the IC belt and had some good TV time and a lot of learning time for me. It was a crash course in professional wrestling, and it was fun, to tell you the truth. So, and the song was fun, it was interesting. If we would have stayed and lived out the angle, it would have been interesting to see how it was perceived and everything, but it was, I can't say nothing bad about it, because it was my first real break into professional wrestling, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Well, then from there, what was actually cool about it is that your gimmick fit so naturally into what they were trying to do with DX once they switched you over. What was your experience like in D-Generation X with some of the people you worked with?
I mean, there are, of course, there are experiences that I'll never see that, you know, that measure of success, I guess, as far as money and as far as television time and popularity and fame and all that. I'll never see that again, I don't think. But I don't know too many wrestlers that will. It was hot for a little while there. I had a lot of great experiences with everybody. You know, I'm still having great experiences with X-Pac. Every now and then I talk with him, but I still see, you know, me and Billy are working together in TNA, and I don't talk much to Sean or to Hunter. I hadn't talked to him at all, to tell you the truth, since I quit, or since they fired me, I mean. But, you know, I did have great experience. To say I didn't have good times is, would be to lie. Now, to say that I, you know, will have carry away great love and respect for everybody that was in DX, that would be a lie also. So, you know, certain people are different. Everybody's different. You know, sometimes it's hard for me to realize that, but I don't like people that are, I guess we're getting on that me not liking Hunter kick. When you,
I'm getting on
that kick anyway, but it just seems like he's gone too far to get what he wanted. I don't know. We had a damn good time doing D-Generation X. I don't know. It just don't get no better than that.
See, that's actually a curiosity about the Triple H situation, is that you were there. A lot of people now, they like to turn around and they say, well, he catches a lot of grief because he's married into the family or whatnot, but you were with him before he was married into the family, so you kind of saw him just as one of the wrestlers going around.
Oh, yeah, no, to me, definitely, bro, to me, he was an equal. He was not the boss's daughter's husband. He was not the guy who'd been up there for 10 years on top. He was my equal for sure. He was terrorizing when I was, you know, Brian Armstrong in WCW. So he kind of went up there right before I went up there, you know. So we came up together. I didn't see him as my boss or anything like that, and he really never acted that way to me. I hadn't talked to him or been around him in 6 years now, so I don't know how he acts or what he does now. But sometimes I felt as if, and maybe it was me, but maybe it wasn't. Sometimes I felt as if he looked down his nose, you know, at me, if he thought I was beneath him because I'm white trash or because I'm a normal guy or whatever. You know, I'm not in the gym 25 hours a day and eating raw eggs and, you know what I mean, uh-huh. Studying the game of wrestling. To me, it was all about having a good time, man, and that's the secret to the success. We had a good time, and you were allowed to have a good time with us every Monday night.
See, I mean, you bring that up, and that's actually a big point that a lot of the guys who have recently left bring up, is that it was fun in the late 90s as far as morale in the locker room. Everyone said it was great, and now it's kind of gone the opposite direction.
Well, it's just like WCW. Mm-hmm. You know, but right before it went totally down the tubes. Everybody settled off into separate cliques, and this clique had power, and this clique hated that clique. And, you know, a house, this isn't in the Bible, a house divided cannot stand. And that's truer words have never been spoken or written, you know. It's just, you got to be a team, and that's for real. You got to be a team, whether it be a tag team match or a singles match, or just hanging out in the locker room. Those got to be your teammates, you know, and everybody's got to be on the same plane. There can't be no superstars that dress in the other dressing room because they've been here longer, and you know what I mean? Everybody's got to offer up, the older guys got to offer up, like, mentorship, you know, got to offer up some advice. Don't be a prick because you were somebody, you know, and the young guys got to get their heads out of their butts and stop being prima donnas and listen to some of the older guys, which comes first, the chicken or the egg, because the older guys are prima donnas too and won't say nothing to the younger guys. So it's a vicious cycle, and I think that up there we kept everybody in check. Rocky, Austin, was nobody better than nobody else. Everybody stayed in check, and about the time I got fired is about the time it started going the other direction, and that's when you get turmoil and you get a crappy product, which is what they're producing now. We got a good locker room in TNA. I'm not going to stand here and tell you we're competing with ratings as the same numbers they are or anything like that, but we just moved. We moved to Thursday night starting this week, and so
Yes.
But so we're doing good. I'm happy about TNA.
See, it's actually funny you bring that up with TNA, but one of the things that I find amazing with WWE right now is that just as you guys are really starting to kind of get the new night and get more exposure with Spike TV putting a lot behind it, it kind of seems like WWE is alienating a lot of the people on their card, and they seem to be going to TNA with you know, this big sigh of relief and arms wide open. Are you finding that the guys that are showing up from WWE are refreshed and actually happier to be working again?
I'm sure of that, to tell you the truth. I thought you were going to ask me, did any of us get ticked off because they just walk in there with a job?
I was going to ask you that.
And that was the case, you know, a couple of times. But as long as a guy comes in and can produce, you'll never get somebody that's level-headed enough to admit it anyway. You'll never get somebody going, oh, I hate that guy, he's a prima donna. As long as he comes in strutting his stuff and then produces on TV and on pay-per-view and makes our product better, I say the more the merrier. Open the floodgates. But yeah, no, and most of the guys up there, the truth of it is, the guys we've been getting can produce. Rhino, Christian Cage, the Dudley Boys, now Spike Dudley just started with us. So, I mean, the guys that are coming down can work, you know, they can do what they got to do. Mm-hmm. If we were getting a bunch of jugheads from up there, like the ones they're trying to push, you know, then I think the story would be different, especially if they were egomaniacs. They'd be going home with crap in their wrestling bag.
The famous shitting in the bag. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, because your family has been involved in the business for a while. I mean, you had a brother in the Young Pistols, and you had Brad for a while in WCW. When you were in WWF in the late 90s, WCW had your brother play a role that was almost entirely based on your gimmick when Brad played Buzzkill.
Yeah.
What were your feelings about that, and how was that first told to you that was even going to happen?
That was a Russo vehicle, but it was the first told to me, to tell you the truth. The first I'd heard of it was Brad called me, and I was on the road, of course, somewhere, and he said, hey, they want me to do this thing, but I feel like it's ripping off your gimmick, and I just wanted to hear it's okay from you. He said, you know, they hadn't given me a break in a long time. I just want to do whatever they ask of me. And so, I mean, of course, that's my brother, man. I want him to make $10 million, so he'll give me one. And so I said, heck yeah, you know, you do whatever you want to do. And then, of course, I don't think they, you know, there was such a power play. There we go again with this house divided. There was such a power play with Bischoff and Russo. And, you know, sometimes they would bury Russo's babies, you know, the guys that Russo liked or used. And, you know, Brad's a great worker. So I think really you bury somebody like Brad in a gimmick like that. But the gimmick didn't offend me at all. I mean, if it would have been anybody else, it might have been offensive. But when it's my brother, and it's my brother Brad especially, I don't think he could offend anybody. You know, he's a great dude.
See, that's actually cool, because I know a lot of the families in wrestling are not a lot of them, but there's a good amount, that always kind of, they end up clashing because they're all in the business. Was it something that your dad did, or what exactly was it within your family that kind of kept you guys still grounded despite being in this crazy industry?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, I think you beat the crap out of us growing up, taught us no matter who you're fighting, if your brother's there, if your brother does something wrong, even if your brother's in the wrong, you fight on your brother's side every time, no matter what, you know what I mean? So he taught us to stick together. You stick together. If you fight one of us and there's another one there, I promise you he's going to kick you and hit you too. You know what I mean? I just promise you that. That's going to happen as sure as my blood runs red. We were just taught that growing up. We were taught respect for one another, even to the point of physical respect to one another, you know. There's been plenty of Monday night mayhems going down in the James Gang backyard back in the day, man. We could fight amongst each other also, but the minute somebody else steps in, it's like a school of piranha. I guess he just taught us that family is everything. Family is all you got. Everybody else is just strangers. You know, you ain't going to pick out a number out of the phone book and call to ask $100 for your electric bill. You're going to call your brother or your sister or your mama or your daddy or your cousin. You know what I mean? Family's very important, and I think he instilled that discipline in us. Yeah, we're very tight-knit family, and I'm very proud of that, actually. I appreciate you saying that, too.
Well, I mean, you could actually, I mean, you could see it even on the TV shows now. You guys have, I mean, your dad's involved in a lot of the things you do. And even in the beginning, when TNA first started, you had that angle with, you know, with your brother and your dad and the referees and all that that was going on in TNA. And I think that's cool. Did you ever approach WWE about possibly bringing in some of your family members when you were there to work alongside some of the guys?
You know what? I did sometimes, actually, just in passing, though. I never sat down with a serious idea. That's, tell you the truth, that ain't me. I ain't the big idea guy. I'm kind of the guy that takes an idea and makes it cool, or makes it good, not cool. That sounds braggadocious, but you know what I mean? I'd take, say, Russo would give me some stuff to say, and I would throw his paper away, but I would remember the things he wanted me to touch on. You know what I mean? I'm not an idea man. I'm the performer side of it, you know.
Yep.
So I never read any big major ideas about it, you know, by anybody, but I used to say, hey, my brother could use a job, or my, you know, but I would have loved to have had the whole family, but you know what, that, then it may have come between us, you know what I mean, because it's, they'd have had us doing all kind of silly crap up there, and really, we probably wouldn't have done it, and we'd probably been in a lot of locker room fights, so, that's just, you know, at the risk of sounding, caveman, that's just kind of how my family is, you know, a lot, just, we're kind of happy-go-lucky, but we don't take a lot of crap from nobody, we don't want to, you know, I don't dish it out, I ain't gonna take it.
See, do you feel, though, that kind of, that approach that you have, that kind of laid back, and it's very old school in the sense of not really making a lot of demands and kind of just doing what you're given correctly and making it work. Do you think that that's left you open to kind of be, I don't want to say used, but a lot of the unscrupulous people in the business kind of see...
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I'm a carpenter. I'm definitely the carpenter. I'm definitely the illegal immigrant. You know what I mean? I'm the guy who gets paid by the fat cat to do what needs to be done. And my family's been that way. It's whole, my father's whole career, my brother Brad's whole career. He worked for 15 years WCW and never was in an angle. You know what I mean? Never was in a storyline. So, I mean, but yeah, they knew if anybody came in and they needed to have a good television match, he could work with Brad Armstrong. And so I feel that, yeah, they do that to me a lot because I'm not the squeaky wheel. I am the squeaky wheel. If I don't get my way, I'll pitch a fit. Don't get me wrong. But I am kind of happy-go-lucky, and I will make whatever you give me work, and I'll make it beneficial to both, you know, to everybody involved, and I'll make it a good television segment. But yeah, they definitely use me for that, you know, but that's what I do. That's what I do good. You know, I don't know. It's just how I roll, I guess Christian would say.
Yeah, totally, man. Well, let me ask you about working with Billy Gunn. When you guys first got put together in WWF, I mean, it was a tag team kind of unlike any other. You guys went out and you attacked the Legion of Doom. I remember you stole their spikes that first week. And ever since then, it was kind of like this different outlook on everything. When you eventually got split from them, it almost felt kind of premature when you and Billy split up. How was that approach to you, and were you happy about splitting up at that point?
No, I was miserable, to tell you the truth. I went into Vince literally and cried tears in his office, please don't split us up. And the reason being is I guess I was a little unsure of myself as a singles competitor. You know, I was with Jeff when I started, then I was by myself and I wasn't very happy with the outcome. Then I was with Billy again and I was successful again. And so I felt like maybe if I had that person in the corner, maybe that's my crutch, or that's my, and believe you me, I'm not calling Jeff Jarrett or Billy a crutch. I'm just saying for me, emotionally and personally and mentally, you know, to have somebody in that corner to depend on a little bit just made me relax a little more. And so when they wanted to split us up, I just saw me, you know what I mean? Like I got vertigo, like I got, you know, stage fright or something. I didn't want to go out there by myself, so I begged and pleaded, and they said, no, they just didn't have it. But it turned out that that I had a good little run at the hardcore champion, you know, at the hardcore title, and I had a decent little run up until I ran my career into the ground.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about that. What do you think was kind of the point in WWE where things started to change for you as far as being on top to the slow decline before they let you go?
Oh yeah, no, it was drugs. I mean, it was all drugs. I didn't care no more. Once I got to that point, I thought I was invincible and untouchable, and yeah, I could do whatever I wanted to. And you know, money. they did it. But I've still got a little sour taste in my mouth about that. But at the same time, I wouldn't have kept me employed either. I would have just fired me in a different way.
Well, it had to be, I mean, kind of disappointing in a way. I mean, when you kind of, as a man, to go up to your employer and tell them something like that, you expect some sort of compassion after the amount of time.
I expected a little bit of sympathy, but I didn't deserve any, and I'll tell you why. And even though I didn't deserve any, I still wanted it, and it still hurt my feelings that I didn't get any. But they had sent me to rehab, you know, two times before that. They had helped me out a couple of times. Maybe that was three strikes and I was out, and I'm plenty mad enough to accept that, but couldn't the guy tell me that to my face? You know what I mean? Couldn't he look me in the eye and say, hey, bro, we tried to help you. We can't. Well, I'm sorry, we can't use you. You know, don't tell me to go home and get everything straightened out with my family and then send me a release form to my house. You know, that's just cowardly. Just somebody scared to look another man in the eye and tell him the truth. You know, I knew it to be the truth. So, you know, but that's, like I said, that's sour grapes. That's water under the bridge. It should be. But I keep a hold of that little grudge for, you know, 6 years now.
Well, no, I mean, as anybody who's, you know, had a drug problem and gotten over it afterwards, it's almost like once you're over it, you kind of look back on that time, and it's like being a whole different person with a new outlook on life. You know, is that what you have now?
Do what now? I'm
sorry.
Would
you consider yourself now, having been through what you've been through and kind of coming through it now, being in TNA, do you have a different outlook on the business now that you've kind of cleaned yourself up?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. I definitely have a different outlook on, it started out with a different outlook on my life, and then that, you know what I mean, that carried over into the business side of it, you know. Just trying to learn to respect the things that are important to me, you know what I mean, and it dang sure ain't this business. It's a great business, and it was my dream, and I'd be danged if I didn't fall asleep and dream it, you know what I mean? I don't think anybody could ask for a better ride. It's just at the end of the ride where it starts slowing down before it pulls into the station, you know. That DX and all that stuff was the big heels and the big turns, and TNA's the kind of the loop-de-loops at the end, and you know, but as far as, I look at life differently now. So, of course, I look at the business totally differently, you know, totally different now. As far as, I still see the same kind of people coming in, prima donnas, don't want to get beat by nobody, and don't want to lose the titles here and do this there. And I just wish a lot of the guys would just open their eyes and realize, hey, man, there's life outside of this business. Me holding the belt doesn't make me better than everybody else, you know. Really, it's all about the cheese. If you're getting enough cheese and you got some joy in your life, some happiness in your life, then, dang, I don't think winning or losing or belts or no belts really counts, you know?
Absolutely. No, that's a great way to look at it. Well, now, I mean, now you're in TNA. You've been there for a little while now. You've teamed with Conan. You've teamed with Ron Killings. And now you're back with Kip James. I always forget which name to call him, Billy Gunn.
I always call him Billy. That's what's real hard at TVs to remember to call him Kip.
I mean, was that tough for you, too, when you went from being Road Dogg to being BG James? I mean, is it...
Oh, yeah, no, it's still tough. I mean, I'm still in the airport, you know, everybody knows me as Road Dogg. Mm-hmm. And then people turning over to TV see me and they go, who's that? Who's that dude? Oh, that used to be the Road Dogg? And then they hear, oh, no, that ain't him. That's BG James, some other guy. You know, so, yeah, it's a difficult transition for sure, but it's my real name. I wanted to go with that so nobody could own it. You know what I mean? Nobody can make a bunch of T-shirts and not give me any money for it.
Oh, yeah, that old game.
But it's a tough transition for sure. I'm sure it is for, you know, everybody knows Billy Gunn is Billy Gunn, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now we're trying to call him Kip James and everything. It's just, yeah, it's a transition that is made necessary because of laws and intellectual intelligence or whatever the crap they call all that creative stuff they own. They make you sign over when you're up in the WWF.
Sign over everything you own, and totally, man. Well, I mean,
I'm going to have to get off here in just a second, dude. My wife just gave me a dirty look.
Oh, not a problem, man. I was going to finish you up. Before I let you go, anything you want to say to all your fans out there who've been following you since the late 90s?
Yeah, you know what? I really do. I appreciate them, and that's for real. A lot of them know my background. You know, if they're big wrestling fans, and they know my background. They know I come from a decent family. I went down the wrong road. I had a great ride, however, even though the road was the wrong one. It sure sucked having to come back all that way. Mm-hmm. Now I'm back on track, and I'm doing good. Hopefully people start tuning into TNA. Maybe not just for the old road dog, BG James, but maybe for the new guys coming up. And like I said, if it makes my team better, I'll put over every guy that can do three flips in a heartbeat. Absolutely. So, I just appreciate the fans following me, man. I try to give them, I try to make them happy. I try to bring them into the ring as much as I can, because honestly, I think that's all I am as a wrestling fan. I'm not the guy on steroids that's jacked up, that's, suntanned and all this. I'm just the fat old white trash redneck who loves wrestling. You know what I mean? And I think a lot of people identify with that. And I hope they do, because that's who I am. I just want to thank them for being my fans, man. And if they knew me, they'd be my friend.
Cool, man. BG, man, thank you so much for being on the show, bro.
All right, buddy. Thank you.
You're welcome, man. Awesome. So there you go, guys. BG James from TNA joining us here on the show, talking about a lot of stuff. Really good to have him on. I know a lot of people were expecting him to go buck silly on Triple H while he was on the show, but we've done that before, and he's talked so much about Triple H in the past. So we wanted to do something a little bit different, so I think it went really well. Learned a lot about his career, and a guy who's really come full circle in the business, coming from days gone by and problems that he had to where he is today. So pretty cool. We were glad to have him on. Guys, there won't be a show next week. I'm going to be away, but there will be a show the week after. And the guest that I have lined up for the week after this one is going to be a good one. So trust me, you don't want to miss it. I'm not going to give away too much of it, but I just hung up the phone. And yeah, I think you guys will definitely enjoy it when you do hear it. So should be cool. Remember, check out the site. The book is available at Amazon.com, HighSpots.com, Everything.com. If they sell books, they sell our book. And if they sell our book, then you should buy the book. Take a read, see what Terry Funk has to say about ECW while you're at it, too. But yeah, guys, check it all out. Make sure you click around the site. Plenty going on. Stuff from Zaha and Mallory Molly, Matt Dogs, Canadian Bulldog, Derek Bergen, Rickard Sandow, my Uncle Ralph, you name it, Mike DeSilva's reviews. You got Kevin Peel with Velocity and SmackDown. You got Nicolo doing the TNA show pay-per-view recaps. Got you there, Mike. Cillian Valani doing the WWE recaps. Plenty of stuff going on the website, so be sure to check it out, worldwrestlinginsanity.com. Until we next talk, this is James Gutman saying thanks for listening, guys. Be well. Thank you for sharing our insanity.
Brought to you by worldwrestlinginsanity.com.